Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It's my pleasure to welcome back Ricky Smith to the podcast live at SMRP. Welcome back, Ricky.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Look forward to it. Great conference here at SMRP.
It has been. Lots of great speakers, lots of great topics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you sit in these topics and in these conference settings, and it's amazing what you hear, and you always pick up one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, you're always learning. People are willing to share. It's great. So, Ricky, for those that are not familiar with you, can you give us a brief introduction to yourself, your background? I know you've been training, you've been consulting, you were in the Army, you've written books, you've done all kinds of great things. But can you kind of summarize that for us?
Yeah. Started my career in 1970s in the U.S. Army. Going through being a rebuild mechanic, working with civilians, rebuilding all the equipment the Army had, from tanks to bulldozers, whatever. We rebuilt them. Got out of the Army, went to work for a small company called Exxon. Got hired there because my dad worked there. And left there. No one ever left Exxon in 30 years. I was the first one leaving in 30 years because I went to work for a company called Alumex Mount Holly, ultimately Alcoa Mount Holly. World-class plant, certified as world-class. And the whole reason around when we say world-class, it means that we had everything that people dream about today, the planning, the scheduling, and it was all a discipline, work execution. It was condition of employment. Condition of employment to follow the process and do the things the right way. And that kind of set the foundation for me. You know, I think about this analogy, you know, if a step in a process is skipped, a performance at a substandard level creates defects known as failures. And I believe that is part of our problems in maintenance a lot of times, is we don't follow the steps in the process correctly.
Yeah, absolutely.
We try to do our own thing. We put the human involvement into it rather than following the process.
Excellent. So over that time, after that, you've went into consulting, you authored a book, and that's what we're here to talk about today, Rules of Thumbs for Maintenance and Reliability Engineering.
Right.
So what prompted you to write this book?
Well, it was Keith Mobley and I. My whole thing was, a lot of knowledge that, you know, him from a reliability engineer standpoint and me from a maintenance and reliability professional standpoint, we have different ways of looking at things. So, you know, a lot of times people just don't understand the basic fundamentals, you know, how to do preventive maintenance. What is truly preventive maintenance? So this book isn't about reliability engineers or maintenance engineers. It's about any maintenance professional. You know, there's a lot in there about engineering, you know, for the maintenance and reliability engineer, but primary focus, like with me, is on preventive maintenance, predictive maintenance, you know, the planning, the scheduling. And I use the stories in there I tell in the book about true experience. And part of that is to help companies. You know, it isn't about writing books for money. It's about writing books to help people.
Yep.
Because if you're there to make money, you should be writing a novel about some kind of conspiracy or something, you know, and I don't do that. I like to help people because you don't make money on books. So the book's there is a step-by-step guide to help you, but also as a reference. I recommend people buy the PDF version on elsevier.com because you can search. So if you have a question about, you know, some topic, you know, failures or whatever it is, you can go and search it and you can find it easy. So it makes it much simpler.
All right, excellent. So rules of thumb, what are these rules of thumb? Are they just general knowledge that we've come up with over time? Is it very specific things? You know, what is the rule of thumb?
Okay, rule of thumb, I'll give you one, okay? So every time we inspect equipment, three times we inspect equipment, we should find at least one thing. And if we're not identifying that something from the PM inspection, something's wrong.
Okay.
You know, so I have different rules, and I've used a 6-to-1 rule. I mean, it depends on where you're at, but the 3-to-1 rule works fine. If you're more, reactive, you may go to 6-to-1.
Okay.
You know, it's all up to them.
All right, so these are just things people have learned over time by doing maintenance and reliability best practices, like the 3-to-1 or 6-to-1 rule. I know there's another one out there, you know, the 10%
rule of preventive maintenance.
Exactly.
That's mine. Yeah.
So there's all these out there, and you've just taken these things and put them into a book so people that are new to the industry can learn these things.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
And there's a lot of articles too on the internet. You can Google Ricky Smith CMRP on the internet, and you know, or on LinkedIn. That's the easiest way to find them. But you know, I've probably got, I don't know, 1,000 articles out there, you know, on this stuff. So, but the 10% rule of preventive maintenance is a big one. And that is, as simply stated, if you got a monthly PM, you got 3 days to do it in, or you're out of compliance.
Yep. Plus or minus 3 days of that due date, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So,
excellent.
So a lot of people come up and say, well, we don't have time to do those PMs, push them off the end of the month. And the end of the month comes around, we got to hurry up and get those PMs done. So we go out and get the PMs done, whatever that means, and we still have failures.
Yep.
I call that insanity, performing preventive maintenance on equipment that continues to fail.
Exactly.
Not logical.
And then at the same time, they'll do that. They'll do the PMs at the last day of the month. The new PMs will come out the first day of the month.
Yeah.
And when do they do them?
3 days later.
Exactly.
We do the same PM again because the month changed. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got the 10% rule for PMs, the 3-to-1 rule for PM inspections. What other common rules of thumb that you see a lot of people talking about or using?
One of the things, you know, I look at what I consider one is like schedule compliance. You know, schedule compliance. And with scheduling, it's scheduled by day, by hour. So essentially the rule is, it's scheduled by day, by hour. Now, starting out with just scheduled by day. Most people do it by the week. And when I mean, I believe by the week, okay, I agree with that. But the problem is, we move it from one day to another.
Within the week, Monday,
we can't get it now. We got too many problems with the equipment. We've got to run it. We get behind on production. So we move it to the next day. The next day, can't get it done. Let's move it to the next week. You know, that's insanity. You know,
yep.
I mean, that means you have reactivity in your organization. You know, and sometimes we got to stop it.
Yep.
And you can't do it in the whole organization. What I use, I take one production line. We'll say only one line. We're going to apply this in schedule. Schedule compliance will always follow it. If we have the handshake with production on that Thursday before, and they say, "Yep, Monday is what this equipment's down," it's down.
Yep.
And it's a tough one.
It is. And I ran into that in a past life. And what we did is we set up KPIs for that.
Yeah.
On-time shutdown, on-time startup. So not only were we trying to hold operations accountable for shutting it down when they said they would, but also holding ourselves accountable to make sure that it started up and ran when we gave it back. Because
if we can't do that, if I say 7 o'clock, we're going to start the equipment up, you know, I want my maintenance people to see that equipment running the specification at 7 o'clock.
Exactly.
Not at 8 o'clock, or we got a meeting before that. What if you do, just schedule it that way.
Yep.
Don't say 7 o'clock, say 8 o'clock.
Yep.
You know?
So we were looking at that originally, and what we found is they'd get all the work done by 7, but then they'd be tweaking and playing with it for the next hour or two.
Yeah.
So
we
had on-time startup, and we also had first hour efficiency in place to help manage some of that. Not only did we start up on time, but how well did we start up?
Yeah.
Right? So we put these things in place to help drive those behaviors. What are some of the less well-known rules of thumb that you guys have had that maybe people could benefit from?
Well, one of the things, if your maintenance organization is reactive, your production organization is 10 times as reactive. So when we say maintenance is reactive and plant manager wants to talk about it, man, we got to do something about maintenance. We need something to do something about the whole plant. Because if maintenance is reactive, I can tell you 100% of the time, and I've been in plants in over 30 countries, I can tell you they're reacting. Okay, production is extremely reactive compared to maintenance.
Yeah, they're changing their production schedules. They're rushing in material. Yeah. They're pushing other stuff off.
We agreed to it. We have it. That's why I say I was at a plant last week, and one of the things we agreed on with production, and we did the schedule meeting on Thursday. We shook hands. I watched the maintenance manager and production manager shake hands. Says Monday, that's the schedule. And Monday, I wasn't there, but I got an email that we made it. That's the first time we ever did that.
Excellent.
And I said, that's awesome.
Yep. And, you know, when you're doing those, you want to start small, right? Like you said, start in a line, start in a specific area. You can't do the whole site at once because it's overwhelming.
It's a crawl, walk, run methodology. I learned in the military. You know, you got to crawl first before you can walk, and then when you've got to walk sustainably, and then when you can start running.
Yep.
But first, we got to crawl.
Yep, absolutely. Now, do you have any rules of thumb around KPIs? I know we got the 10% compliance piece, but is there, you know, in my experience, we set a KPI. It drives a behavior, but it might also drive inadvertent behaviors. So I've always learned that if you pick a KPI, you got to find a balancing one. That's just a rule of thumb I've kind of learned over time.
You're right. Because if you got one KPI and you don't have another one to, like PM compliance, you know, so what would I use to balance with PM compliance? And it could be that you know, my emergency labor hours.
Yep.
You know, the balance between it. Because if PM compliance is bad, then probably our emergency urgent work, it's too high. We got to do something about it.
Yep.
And how do you do that? It's not complicated.
No. Nope.
Start with one line, like you were saying. You start with one piece of equipment, and then put a sign on it, warning, maintainable equipment, no reactive maintenance authorized in this area, signed by the plant manager. We did that last week, by the way.
Does that work? Because I've seen it. I've seen pictures of it, but I've never actually tried it.
It works. It works. It just, I mean, it's a shock and awe. You know, it's that Arnold, what is the name? Norman Schwarzkopf used to have the shock and awe.
Yep.
Yeah, I want them to see it. It's like, whoa, this is a new day. Yeah, new business here. When you come on this line, don't bring reactivity with you.
Excellent. I'm going to have to try that one of these days because I keep seeing it, but I've never actually done it.
Yeah. If you get the right plant with the right attitude, they'll do it.
Excellent.
Because you got to try something different.
Yeah.
If you keep doing the same thing over and over again, we'll still continue to get the same result.
Exactly. So what else can they benefit from this book? I know there's these rules of thumbs. Are there tables and charts and graphs and all these other things that help us make informed decisions?
There's processes in there, step by step, like with planning and scheduling, how planning and scheduling should be done.
Okay.
Step by step. How do you do that? So within that rules of thumb, you know, how do I plan work? How do I schedule work?
Yep.
There's process maps in there for planning and scheduling. They're very simplistic. You know, they need to be more complicated for your company. They came from Alcoa and Mount Holly. That was a world-class plant. But most companies they may have a process map, but they don't follow it, or they don't even have them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was at a client site last week, four sites in one campus. Not a single one had a process for planning scheduling.
Yeah.
Not a single one.
Yeah.
Absolutely massive facility, and there wasn't a single process. There was one process in one plant, but nobody knew about it except the maintenance manager.
Well, when I tell people, you start out, you know, to me with a process map, I'm going to start out with a clean slate. We'll get on a whiteboard and we'll say, okay, what's step one? Where's the work come from?
Exactly.
We'll identify where the work comes from. Then what's the planning process? How are we going to plan it? And then once we mapped out the planning process, we mapped out the scheduling process, the work execution process, the work order closeout process, which most people miss.
Yeah. Now,
That's a rule of thumb. All work orders close with all the codes identified, all the information on it accurate. So the planner is the only person that should close a work order. And I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but the planner is the only one sitting calm in an office, I hope. You know, they're not out there turning wrenches or chasing fires.
Yep.
You know, that's the person should be looking and say, no, that code's not right, it changes it. Because once it goes into CMMS, it's in there.
Yep.
We can't do anything about it after that.
Yep. And yet, you know, speaking of that, rule of thumb for me that I've come to learn over time after visiting many sites is planners should not carry a radio.
Yeah.
And I go into site after site and the planners are running around with a radio or they're sitting at their desk with a radio and people are calling for parts, information, all these other things, and they're not planning their job.
Yeah,
so rule of thumb, don't give them a phone, don't give them a radio.
That's right. What I also say, you know, how do you know if you got a proactive planner? Call them on the phone, say, hey, I need a part right now. And next thing you should hear is a dial tone. That's a proactive planner.
Call the storeroom.
You need to call somebody else. It's not my job.
Exactly. Exactly. So
I'm future work. I'm not this week's work.
Exactly. And
that's a rule of thumb.
Yep. You know,
planner deals with next week and following.
Yeah, I always say planners are, you know, 1 to 4 weeks out, somewhere in that range is where they're operating. This week, day to day, that's a supervisor problem. That's not a planner problem.
That's right. And 2 to 4 weeks, you mentioned, you know, that's the schedule. That's the ready schedule. So ready to be scheduled.
Yep.
So we should, and what a lot of people understand what a week of backlog is. Well, I know you know this, but a week of backlog, if I got 10 maintenance people, 40 hours a week, so 1 week of backlog is 400 hours.
Yep.
It's uncomplicated.
Exactly. But many are still using work order count, not backlog based on hours.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's another good rule of thumb that.
Yeah. I got 100 work orders in my backlog. What does that mean?
Exactly.
What does that equal? Could it equal 100 hours or could it equal 100,000 hours? I don't know.
Exactly. So we need to put it in those terms that we can actually use to drive our decisions. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL blended learning for maintenance and reliability professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Now, We mentioned processes. How important is it to have these processes in place? The planning process, you know, maybe there's a PM optimization process, a fracas process. How important is it to have these things documented?
Well, if you don't have processes documented, you're not going to go anywhere. That's your roadmap to make sure we stay on path, make sure we're following the same route to get to the objective. And if there's a roadblock in that objective, then we can pick an alternative. So we can always, worst thing can happen, if something's not working, we can go back to the process map and change the process. But the other thing with it, how do you define roles and responsibilities with something if you don't have a process map? You know, so it's a big thing with me. I learned, you know, I was at the Pentagon for a year doing an investigation on Walter Reed Medical Center. And when I was there, it was kind of interesting. They gave me a thing called RACI chart. And I had a person explain to me, how do they use it? And I'm taking it back now into civilian world and saying, this is how we should be defining roles and responsibility. All the stakeholders in the room, we got the process map.
Yep.
Okay, and then from that, we're gonna find R, that's the doer. Okay, that could be multiple people. A, the buck stops here. So one task may be, you know, inspect equipment. Okay, let's say that task. So the A should be the maintenance supervisor accountable. So in other words, I don't need to talk about, everybody is not accountable. In the RACI chart, only one person for each task can be accountable.
Yes.
The buck stops here. So the technician's the doer. And you may have consultant, could be a maintenance engineer or somebody like that. And informed could be production manager. You know. So anyway, RACI chart works great.
Yep, absolutely. You need the process map. From there, you get the stakeholders in the room. You can define the roles and responsibilities. Use that to build a job plan, or not a job plan, sorry, a job description that actually reflects what they're supposed to be doing.
That's right, exactly.
Because you got to go to a lot of facilities and you ask to see the job description and it doesn't match what they're doing.
That's right.
And it doesn't even match what they should be doing.
Well, it's like on a process map too. The process map is a requirement for identifying leading and lagging KPIs. You know, so process is more than just that.
Absolutely.
What do I want to measure in each step in the process? What metric do I use? And that's what the SMRP metrics are great for.
Yep.
Yeah.
Identifying
those metrics.
Yeah, that they tell you, is this process working? Where is this process broken?
Right.
All these different things. The other thing I found with the processes as well is it defines those roles and responsibilities. It defines those metrics or KPIs. But I take it a little bit one step further. And what I mean by that is if there's some sort of communication that has to occur, such as a work order's planned, now it's ready for kitting, how is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Is it work order status change and a report ran? Is it email?
Right.
Is it
That's
phone
right.
call? Because it puts everyone on the same page for how are we going to communicate this stuff?
I mean, think about this. I mean, like I said, we were doing it in 1980. And now today, we still have most companies aren't doing it the right way.
Exactly.
So, and that's why their maintenance cost is so high. Maintenance cost is a percentage of replacement asset value for a reactive organization. It can be anywhere from 9 to 15%.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe even higher. They just don't know.
Yep.
Because they're thrown in a big bucket. You know, it all always captured in the right on the asset. World class is 1.4 to 3.4%. It's a massive difference.
Oh, huge.
It's massive.
And you look at like the amount of materials kept in a storeroom versus in a reactive plant,
it
could be 20% of the replacement asset value versus 0.4% in some of the proactive facilities.
That's right, exactly.
So
you got a big storeroom good, you gotta have stuff just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we got process maps, we got all these things. How detailed do we go in these process maps? Is it, you know, very high level, here's work requests, here's plan, here's planning, here's schedule, dive into those deeper?
I want to get in deeper sometime, but at first I want to start out with a simple process map.
Okay.
And then get more complex, because we got to get more complex as we advance into the organization.
Yep.
But we got to crawl before we walk. Because right now, if you don't have a process map, let's just keep it simple, because we're talking a new language. They don't speak our language.
Yeah, so we stay kind of do a macro process where it's planning, scheduling, and then once we get that moving, people are aware of it, then we'll say, okay, planning, here's how we do planning, then build a sub-process.
Right. And here's how we do scheduling, here's how we do work execution.
Excellent.
Work order closeout, and so on.
All right. Now, one of the questions I get a lot with, and right around processes and KPIs, is how many KPIs should we have? So is there a rule of thumb for how many KPIs a typical person can actually manage and utilize?
Typically, you know, when I call it a scorecard, and it should be for every different managerial level.
Yep.
So it's typically 4 to 6 metrics.
4 to 6,
four
okay.
4 to 6 KPIs. That makes it easy.
All right.
Because, you know, it's like you got to know the score in the game.
Yeah.
And the ultimate score is, you know, like on a football game, the football players know you know, how many rushing yards they need, how many need to be doing it, yep. how much are we really doing, so they can compare themselves. Say, okay, guys, Coach Kim is okay, our rushing yards down, we got to pick it up. And that's what we're talking about here. We got to know the score in the game so we know we can, how we can play it. Maybe we need to step up our game yep. a little bit in there.
So 4 to 6 typically per level.
Yeah.
All right, so that level might be the planners might have these 4 to 6 they're looking at. Maintenance supervisors might have these 4 to 6 that yep. are different.
Yep.
Maintenance manager has these 4 to 6.
And they all build up to the plant dashboard.
That's right. There's full alignment. So we yep. can say if the planner does this, it influences this at the department level, which
that's
influences
right.
this at the site level, which meets the organizational, right?
Yeah, you all the way down to the financial level.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, excellent, yeah. excellent. Now, how do people pick the right KPIs to put on these cards?
It's not complex. You know, what you have to do is ask yourself, what is it I want to know? So in maintenance planning, what is it you really want to know? Like in maintenance planning, well, do I want to know, do I have stockouts? Would that affect planning? You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could affect, it'll affect the scheduling, but it's going to affect the planner. Why can't I going to put something on there when I don't have the parts to kit?
Yep.
You know, they're not there. Or it could be I don't have the availability of people. You know, what's the labor hours I have available?
Yep.
Because typically, to me, when a company starts out with planning and scheduling, I always take two people, the guys that they're the go-to guys. They're always one that, yeah, man, they'll run out there and put the fire out quick. They'll still carry the fire extinguisher. They'll still keep going out fighting the fire. Those two. And the rest of them, we're going to have proactive.
Yep.
And if we pull one off, we're going to go to one at a time.
Right. You know, that way
the maintenance supervisor knows who they are.
Yep. That way we don't disrupt the organization, cause too much chaos at once. And I know when we started going from in one of past life, we had 6 packaging lines. We had a palletizing area. And every shift, there was a mechanic assigned to each line to babysit.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
we started going from that man-to-man defense, and we started pulling people away to more of a zone. So, okay, this guy's going to cover these two lines, and this other guy's going to go do some proactive stuff. We made a lot of people very scared for a while. They were so worried about not getting support, not getting repairs done, all these things. So understand just exactly what you're saying. One at a time, little by little, right?
Yeah.
Can't just pull everyone away because everyone will lose their minds at that point.
Just think, in 1980, we had production lines that were 1/8 of a mile long. There was one maintenance person assigned to that area. Okay, and he wasn't doing reactive work. He was doing proactive. He was doing his PMs and so
yep.
on. He wasn't a person pulled off. There was a reactive person that dealt with the reactive stuff. You know, so when you come to me, I get on the radio and I call, you know, but you're supposed to call your supervisor and let them call somebody. But out of respect, to start with, we had to do that. And
yep.
ultimately, it got to the point that said, sorry, I can't make a phone call for you. I
yep.
can't call anybody. You got to call somebody yourself.
Yep.
I'm on a proactive job. You know, got to leave me alone. That's,
yep.
that's the rule now. Rule change.
So with that change, is there any rules of thumb that you've learned over time about how do we drive this change? I know you mentioned start small,
yeah.
right? What else can people
you gotta
do?
You got to measure change. You got to measure the metrics are critical. And you got to put them up big so people can see them. You got to keep them right. You
yep.
got to start your day looking at metrics. That's the biggest point.
All right.
Because otherwise, we don't know the score in the game. It's like the football, back to the football. They're going to look at that scoreboard.
Yep.
And that's where they start the game. They're going to look at the scoreboard. And every inning, they're going to look at that scoreboard. Or during the whole game, they're looking at it.
So when we pick these KPIs initially, are these ones we have to live with for the rest of our lives?
No,
or are
no,
these ones
no.
that may, some may stay, some may come and go?
It evolves. As new information presents itself, then we'll change them.
All right. So
if it's not certain ones, we may have forever.
Yep. So we might pick one such as planning accuracy, for example,
yep.
because right now our accuracy is not good. Once we get that under control and people are moving and our schedule is
that's
going
right.
well, then that one can fade away and we might bring in something else that we're looking
yep.
at, right?
We still may have it, you know, it's in our computer, but we're not looking at it
yep.
anymore.
It's
in there in case we have some problems. We can go in and dive in, do a root cause analysis and find
yep.
out what the problem is. And that's what a lot of problems is too. People don't use root cause analysis. They use it on equipment. Well, sometimes. But they don't use it on the processes and maintenance.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, is there any rules of thumb for how many root cause analysis a person can do in a week, a month? Because I've seen organizations where, you know, poor maintenance supervisor gets 4 or 5 a day he's got to do on top of everything else.
I want triggers, you know, established, you know, based
yep.
on certain losses or certain failures or whatever will trigger root cause analysis and say, you know, what's the staffing going to be, the time schedule, you know, they're going to be given, because they got to be given time to go into a room and solve the problem. Some
yep.
things are just Jedi's, what I call Jedi, just do it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's not difficult, but you got to put things in a formal process. Because right now, in most organizations, it's informal, which causes reactivity, which causes loss of money, and loss of people. Yep. Turnover's high in companies. You know that, and you've seen it.
You know,
people are like, man, I hope I find another job next week. If you want to keep people, you don't have to pay them more. You just got to treat them with respect and give them a calm environment.
Believe yep, me. Absolutely. Because you see them, they get burned out.
Yeah.
Right? They get tired. They get, you know, they can only do so many root cause analysis in a single day that are actually effective.
Yeah. Right? I was at a plant 3 months ago, and I asked everybody in the room, I said, so what's the average hours that you guys work in overtime a week? And some of them are saying high is 80% overtime. So they're working. How can you do that? How can you do that? I don't know how.
Maybe 1 week, but you're not doing it.
But their maintenance overtime was at least 30% on average. And that's extremely high.
That is really high.
I want people to have a good life, enjoy life.
Yep.
We got to get the equipment calmed down first. And then we'll come back to real life. Like I tell people, so you know you're reactive maintenance when you leave work in the morning and that kid's about, you know, 2 foot high, grabbing a hold of your leg, come back that afternoon, going to college.
Yeah.
You know, you missed a whole life because you've been at work, you know. Yep. Terrible place to lose your life at.
Absolutely. And one of the things I've learned over time is maintenance is quick to blame operations for a lot of the problems.
Yeah.
Maintenance has issues, operations has issues. And one of the things that one of my engineering managers once upon a time told me is, we got to fix our house first before we can go start yelling at the other guys.
That's a great point. If we don't clean up our house, there's no need to ask somebody else to clean up their house.
Exactly. So one of the things we spent time on was focusing on availability of the assets, making sure our planning and scheduling process was as good as it could be based on the constraints from operations, and doing all these different things. Once and only then, we went and talked to operations, okay, how do we lock in these schedules? How do we do these things? Because in past, previous to when we were there, they tried doing some of this stuff, and maintenance would just drop the ball everywhere.
Yeah. Well, everybody says, we tried that before, it didn't work. Well, why didn't it work? It just doesn't work. Okay, that's not a good excuse.
Yep.
Yeah.
So have you found that approach in other organizations where maintenance kind of gets their house in order first, then they go
it's
start?
It's absolutely the best way to do it. I've said that in every place I go into. Don't worry about the noise around you. Focus in on your noise. Get it calmed down. Get it down to an acceptable level, that reactivity.
Yep.
And once you get your house cleaned up and start moving forward, people say, what the heck are you guys doing over there? Glad you asked. With the next discussion we're going to have with you guys.
Yep,
you
know? Exactly.
Yeah. But don't be pointing fingers and calling names, because we all got problems.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the stuff we did in that instance, basic blocking and tackling.
That's right.
Build the bill of materials and actually figure out what we have in stock and not. Yeah. You know,
what's your min-max, what's your reorder point, you know?
You know, it was basic stuff like that. It was like
secure the storeroom, lock the storeroom.
Yeah. Even simple things like processing a work request within a certain time frame. In the past, previous to us doing this, there were times where there was work requests that would go unlooked at for months. And then we wonder why operations doesn't buy into our process, right? Yeah. So, you know, we measured how quickly are we looking at these things. We only did that for a short period of time to show that we were actually addressing and dealing with these things. But that was a quick way to help build buy-in as well.
Yeah.
Right? And if we weren't going to do that work, communicate it to them that we weren't doing it,
exactly.
And here's why.
Exactly. Communication is critical.
Yep.
It was kind of interesting. Every place I go to, the maintenance shop is in disarray. So first thing, that's part of that cleaning the house. So I know we got to clean another thing, but clean the shop. Get the shop organized, get it functional. Show people this is a new day.
Yep.
Because you got to get that shock and awe. You got to get them see something different. Say, what's going on in maintenance, man? The shop's clean. And the door's locked. I can't go in there.
Yep.
Right. If you got a card key, you can get in there, but you don't have authority if you're not a maintenance person.
Yep.
Okay. Because that's the way it should be. We don't want people taking tools or messing with the equipment or whatever during different hours, you know. And the same thing with that is get my people trained. I think training is critical. Because you got to teach, you got to educate your people. You got to give them knowledge to give them the skill.
Yep.
And not necessarily the knowledge with hands-on. You know, you should always have skilled people. You should have tested them and know they have the knowledge. But to make sure they have the knowledge of everything we do, you know, how to check out parts, you know, how to do all the things. That's why those process maps are critical. So that's what we train them to, the process map.
Yeah, we're not just looking for those technical skills. We're also looking for their ability to follow the process, the procedures.
That's right.
If we have a procedure for installing bearings, that they're actually doing it. They're aligning properly.
That's
they're
right.
Using tolerances, all those things.
And I like, you know, I say it, but some people may not agree with me, but a lot of people have a problem finding maintenance people now.
Yep.
One of my rules is now that go to the nearest National Guard, Army Reserve, you know, center and talk to the commander and say, hey, I'd like to talk to your people, you know, when they come in for drill and see how many interested in change of career, you know, come to work for us. you know, because, I mean, they don't have to be skilled, but they have one thing, they have discipline.
Yep.
That's the thing. If I could have anything first, if I could pick one thing, I want discipline in the people. So you'll have a higher probability of getting, you know, disciplined people from Army Reserve or National Guard unit locally. Mm-hmm. And these people want to work somewhere that, yep, close to home. So, yep, yeah, they're going to have to go 2 weeks a year or whatever, but that's okay. I can deal with that.
Yeah, as long as you're getting skilled, disciplined people afterwards,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
All right. Excellent. Is there anything else from a rule of thumb standpoint that you want to talk about? We talked about a lot of different things here.
Yeah, we talked about a lot, yeah. We could talk all day on rules of thumb.
But, exactly.
But yeah. I think it's, if people listen and pick one or two things to go back and do from this podcast, then they'll make a difference. You know, they need to be reading books. They need to be looking at postings, like on LinkedIn, the post I make.
Yep.
Most of my posts come from somebody tells me they got a problem, and I'm helping them solve it. You know, yep, not by going to their plants, but by talking to,
yep,
them. Then I post something, man, you got to be doing this. So go to my LinkedIn, follow me on LinkedIn, and you'll learn a lot.
All right. And where can they get the book, Rules of Thumb?
You can go to Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon. I'd recommend you go to Elsevier Publishing, because that way you can download the PDF.
All right, excellent.
Okay, Rules of Thumb for Maintenance and Reliability Engineers, and there's also Industrial Machinery Repair. You know, that's a good technical book for technicians. Get up there and understand how to install bearings and how bearings work. Because you got to understand the basics of things so you can do the maintenance on them,
yep,
in my opinion.
Yeah, so you shouldn't install bearings with hammers then.
No, I don't think so.
All right, Ricky. Well, right. I want to thank you for taking the time today.
Right.
I'll make sure to put links to all that in the show notes so people can, yep, quickly access the books,
yep,
your LinkedIn profile. But if people want to get in touch with you, ask questions, how do they do that?
It's easy. AskRickySmith@gmail.com.
All right, perfect. I'll put that in the show notes as well. So okay, if anyone has any questions, they can get in touch with you.
Yep, sounds good.
Hey, right. Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.